Customers are rushing to your store. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify has everything you need to sell in person. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into the one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. Connect with customers in line and online. Shopify helps you drive store traffic with plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns from TikTok to Instagram and beyond. Get hardware that fits your business. Take payments by smartphone, transform your tablet into a point-of-sale system, or use Shopify's POS Go mobile device for a battle-tested solution. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/theathletic, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/theathletic to take your retail business to the next level today. shopify.com/theathletic.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Standing Room Only podcast. Yes, I'm your host, Ben Standing. I cover the Washington Commanders for The Athletic. Usually that means after a game, I'm talking to you from the press box or if they're on the road, that city. I did not, however, make the trip to San Francisco. Different variables, including the holiday season. By the way, happy holidays to everybody. Merry Christmas. Happy Hanukkah. Hope everybody has a safe and happy holiday week, especially considering it is absolutely freezing almost anywhere in the country, but it is here freezing in the East Coast. It was 6 degrees apparently today at one point on my phone, according to my phone. None of that matters though with the game. The weather had no bearing on the game for the Commanders. Unfortunately, the play of San Francisco's offense, their big play capability, then Nick Bosa on defense, that had a lot to do with San Francisco winning 37-20 over Washington. While I was not there, our friend Matt Parrish with the Washington Times did attend. He and I just spoke a moment ago, so we'll discuss. We discussed the game, the mood, the quarterback situation, not having Cam Curl, how that impacted the team, and a bunch more. So we'll get to that in a moment here on the podcast, which of course you can find on iTunes, Spotify, anywhere you do your podcasting. You can listen to it on The Athletic ad-free. If you have not subscribed to The Athletic, I say this all the time, but right now, for real, there are multiple deals going on. I believe right now you can get 50% off. Click on any one of my articles, and you can do that. But honestly, if you wait a day or two, I believe next week there's even a bigger deal. I don't know if I have it in front of me here, but it is either way. There's some great deals, whether for yourself or you need it for a gift for somebody. Check out The Athletic. I would encourage you to do so. All right, let's just get to a couple of things before I get to Matt. He and I did not talk. So we talked a bunch about the game. Obviously, disappointing, and yet I don't think too many people really thought Washington was going to come out and win this game. There was a lot of hope after the first half, right? You're right there with the Niners. Even though it's not like Washington was scoring tons of points or anything, it was 7-7 at halftime, but that was obviously a bit of a win for Washington considering, you know, they're the underdog on the road. But then in the second half, things started to unravel. There were signs of this early on, too many penalties for Washington early in the game, wiped out some big plays, and some chance at momentum. And, you know, this is a team that just simply, we talk about this all the time, their margin for error is basically non-existent, right? It just, that's kind of the way that it is. They really just cannot afford any kind of mistakes. I'm trying to look up here how many penalties Washington actually had. Hold on, let me go to a different screen here. But, you know, the offensive line, a rough day. Right. That not only did they give up that they have a bunch of penalties, but so Washington had 6 penalties for 51 yards. It seemed worse than that, to be honest. But the offensive line, too many penalties, three specifically that I recall on the offensive line. They had Heinicke, you know, having to run for his life again. Heinicke, of course, gets hit and by Nick Bosa, who's, you know, arguably going to be the defensive player of the year in the league, causes a fumble in the second half. And that was in a situation where Washington had turnovers and back-to-back plays, which, of course, then led to the benching of Heinicke for Carson Wentz. And Matt and I talked about that, what we think of that. Anybody who's been listening to this podcast knows we've anticipated some version of this for a bit. Ironically, I actually thought it wasn't going to happen in this game because Heinicke was playing fairly well. He finished with a quarterback rating of 114.6. He was 13 of 18, 166 yards, two touchdowns. He did have the one interception. But again, they just can't score. They only had 14 points when Wentz came in with a little over 9 minutes to go in the fourth quarter. And, you know, I think Wentz is probably going to keep the job next week. Ron Rivera said post-game to reporters that he anticipates making that decision early in the week so that quarterback can get, you know, the maximum amount of work. So I would imagine we would hear something by Tuesday. I mean, it's weird because of the holiday, this being Saturday, but I would imagine, you know, if practice starts Wednesday, that by Tuesday we would probably have some sense of who the quarterback will be. The other sort of big news of the day beyond the result is the return of Chase Young. And Matt and I didn't talk about that a lot, so I'll just do that here. Look, obviously, first of all, it's great to see him back out in the field. You know, for all the way we talk about this typically, you know, what does this mean for this team? What about his contract? Is he ever going to live up to the hype? All that aside, the young man has been through a lot over the last 13 months. He had the significant knee injury. We've talked about it here, the ACL and the patella tendon damage. You know, it's obviously kept him out a lot longer than people anticipated. So to see him back out there was a big deal. I'm sure it was a huge deal for him. And frankly, I think he easily exceeded expectations that were placed on pretty much everybody. I mean, Ron Rivera has been saying for a while now, they're waiting for him to, for Chase Young to sort of, you know, get going out there to really like let loose. And it hadn't happened. I saw a guy today out there who really was letting loose. I mean, he didn't have a sack, but he did have a pass. He did defend a pass. He jumped up, knocked the ball down, had two tackles. He did a really nice job of reading a screen pass to McCaffrey and got in the way for that led to Brock Purdy having to go elsewhere with the ball. I thought he looked good. Now, good enough to be like at a Pro Bowl level? No, I don't think that's the case. Enough that by the time, enough that he can really impact this season with what's remaining? I mean, I don't know. They only have two regular season games left. If they make the playoffs, that's at least three games in 3 weeks. Maybe by the end of that, you would think he could, but we'll see. The fact that he was out there was good. James Smith Williams left the game at one point with a potential concussion. So we'll see where he's at. It would be ironic if Chase Young is back at the point when they were to lose a defensive lineman. And I'm curious to see the snap count come whenever that is available. Chase Young played far more than the projected 12 to 16 snaps. I think he played around 30 snaps would be my guess. Bottom line, it was great to see him out there. Hopefully this is a sign of things to come. Hopefully he keeps the energy up. Hopefully he maintains this discipline. If all that happens, you know, whether it's this year or next year, hopefully that leads to being the kind of productive player we all thought he was going to be after his defensive rookie of the year season in 2020. All that said, Washington lost. The good news though is, and I maybe should have said this already, but nothing's changed in terms of the playoff situation. The Lions and Seahawks entered the day a half game behind Washington. They both lost. The Giants entered the day a game ahead of Washington with the tiebreaker. They also lost. So Washington is still the seventh seed with 2 weeks to go. In order to catch the Giants, they would have to win their next two, and the Giants would have to lose both games. So that seems unrealistic, especially since in week 18, Washington is playing Dallas and the Giants are playing Philly. Philly and Dallas may have nothing to play for based on their circumstances. So if we're assuming Washington beats Dallas, you'd have to say the same with the Giants. Then again, Philly almost won today playing with Gardner Minshew because Jalen Hurts was out, but obviously they would rest other guys. More importantly, though, if Washington wins its last two games, there's nothing Seattle or Detroit or anybody else can do. If Washington splits their last two games, they need either Detroit or Seattle to lose at least one game. If they do that, they're in the playoffs for the second time in 3 years under Rivera. If they don't, we have a lot of we start talking about the offseason far earlier than anticipated right now. So that's where things are at with the Commanders. Let's get to my conversation with Matt Parris here. But as also, there will be new material up on The Athletic for you to read. Podcasts this week, even though it is heading towards New Year. So check all that out. But right now, here's my conversation with Matt Parris from San Francisco here on the Standard Room Only Podcast.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
All right, as I mentioned in the intro, I did not make the trip to San Francisco, but somebody that did is with us now on the podcast, Matt Parris from the Washington Times. Is there, Matt? I greatly appreciate the time because I know it's a hectic journey when a game ends and you got all the things you got to do. So appreciate the time. I guess just since you're there and I'm not, give us the mood. We can get to the game in a second, but give us sort of the mood, a tough loss. And there's a lot of, I would think, uncertainty in the air because of the quarterback. So what was your sense of the post game scene there?
Yeah, it was a weird mood, but it wasn't nearly as distraught as it was the previous week when they lost to the Giants. I think a lot of guys found out after the fact that Seattle and Detroit had lost, that they were still in playoff position. They know that these final 2 weeks come down to it, but that they weren't depressed by any means. I think it was last week was a lot more deflating. And now the main question for everyone on everyone's mind is, you know, what are they going to do at quarterback?
Yeah, I mean, that's the weird thing. Obviously, it's tough to lose. And the second half got away from them. The turnovers, Nick Bosa, what, you know, George Kittle, say whatever you want. But at the end of the day, nothing's really changed for their situation. They're still the seventh seed. They're still a game plus a tiebreaker behind the Giants. They're still a half game ahead of the Lions and the Seahawks. And they win the last two games they're in. So, I mean, that's kind of where things are at. I guess now the question is, do we think they have the goods to get that done? They may only need to win one game if the Lions and Seahawks, you know, don't win anymore. But, you know, we can't assume that. And that is what's so wacky about it. What was it like sort of the ebb and flow there watching it when, you know, there were points where it felt like Washington was right there, but, you know, they just couldn't stop San Francisco when they needed to, and just too many mistakes on offense throughout the game.
Yeah, it really kind of swung there in the fourth, and you knew after that second turnover that after the first turnover, I started paying attention to Wentz. He still had his hat on, the snapback, but he was really rifling those passes now. We kind of joked about this last week during the Giants game that he looked really fired up and ready to go during those warm-ups, knowing in case he could play at any moment, and that was definitely the case this time around. It seemed like after that first turnover, he maybe got a feeling. And then by that second one, Sam was nice and let me borrow his binoculars. And I found the moment that Rivera told Heinicke that he was being benched. And you could just see the anger on Heinicke's face. And I don't know if they showed this on the television broadcast, but Heinicke slammed his helmet down in anger after he walked away from Rivera. I think he was really frustrated with himself that he lost that opportunity. I thought it was very curious that Rivera said afterwards that he made the decision to protect Heinicke. There were still 9 minutes left in the game. That seems like an odd time to, if you were actually going to make a change. I think this for Washington, it was more about, all right, actually, let's see what we have in Wentz, because their position hasn't really changed. They could use those 9 minutes to really see what Wentz had. And I don't know about you, Ben, but I thought he played well.
Yeah, I mean, that's the weird thing. Like, let's just suppose it was like a 10-3 game, you know, a tight, but it's still one score game. Taking out the quarterback, even if you're not scoring, would seem like a potentially tough deal because you're right there. It's tight. But when the game starts to get away from you, as it did, they're down 16 points with back-to-back turnovers. You know, I know Ron Rivera said he wouldn't blame Heinicke, and that's fine. The interception, you know, looked like Brian Robinson kind of stopped running his route, or at least he and Heinicke weren't on the same page. But, you know, this is 2 weeks in a row Heinicke's fumbled when hit by a pass rusher. But because of the margin there, it did feel like a good opportunity to see with Wentz, because reality is you've got to make this is now – we keep talking about these decisions Rivera has to make. This one now, this week, is the one we've been kind of waiting for. Who's he going to go with? And, you know, to me, Wentz seems like the way to go, because you can blame whatever you want. This offense doesn't score points. I mean, that's just the way it is. I mean, they just haven't scored more than 23. They've only scored more than 23 once since Heinicke's been in there. The weapons are there. We see Jahan Dotson had a big day. And look, penalties screwed them. The offensive line's a mess, but they got to do something. So I didn't have a problem with it. I think it kind of worked out for them that the way the game flowed, and you're right, I think Wentz looked fine. You know, you can never tell some of these relief appearances, but I thought that was good. Both of the quarterbacks came out. I did watch the press conferences, but you tell me, being there in the room, what was your sense of how those guys were kind of handling it?
Yeah, you could tell Heinicke was frustrated with himself at the podium. He said all the right things. You could tell he was beating himself up a little bit. Wentz, you know, I think he realized that there would be some, you know, he tried to keep it in the moment. But I think for him, the perspective is really interesting. You think about how last season ended for him in Indianapolis. He had those two games there to get the Colts in the playoffs and pretty much choked it away, especially in week 18. If he gets these last two starts, he'll have an opportunity to redeem himself a little bit. So, you know, I asked him about that. He kind of just gave a, you know, fighting for our own destiny kind of line, didn't really make it about himself. But I think both of these guys realize that no matter who Rivera chooses, one of them is going to be on the short end of the stick, and that's going to be tough for one of them to deal with. But both, I think, seem kind of hopeful that maybe they would start. I don't know how Heinicke necessarily is reading into it, but I think Wentz does like his chances.
Yeah, I mean, look, we'll get to the Browns later in the week. They've got a good pass rusher, you know, a Bosa-level pass rusher in Myles Garrett. And, you know, they, you know, we'll see. The offensive line's not good. That, in theory, is better to keep Heinicke in than Wentz. But, again, the scoreboard, you got to make the scoreboard operator work at some point, and they're just not doing it. So I'm imagining it's going to be Wentz. It has felt Rivera has sort of been hedging in that direction for about a while. He finally makes the move. We'll see what happens. Just to go to the defense really quick, boy, Cam Curl's agent has got to be feeling pretty good about himself. Like, we talk a lot about which guys are going to get paid this offseason. Cam Curl is in the Terry McLaurin boat from this past year. He'll go into his fourth year this year. And look, Washington was a mess earlier in the year with allowing explosive plays. They threw 3 weeks. So Curl missed the first two games with a thumb injury, came back in week three. They were fifth, I want to say, in allowing the most 20 explosive plays through those three games. So I'm including the first one that Curl came back. From week four until the last Giants game, they allowed the third fewest explosive plays, meaning runs of 12 or more or passes of 20 or more. Well, today it was back to giving up too many big plays without him in there. In particular, a really rough opponent when you're missing that safety who can play all over the place. When you've got George Kittle out there, it really did feel like Kittle and McCaffrey, that one of those two guys would benefit from Curl being out. And it was Kittle. He was a presence all day, two touchdowns, and had another big catch. It's obvious to say they missed Cam Curl, but they missed Cam Curl.
They did. And, you know, I actually thought they played pretty well in the first half. I mean, they only gave up 7 points. The defense looked pretty active. I thought Chase Young was a huge surprise personally. But yeah, you know, we talked to Derek Forrest after the game, and he took full responsibility for Kittle's first touchdown, said he should have, you know, that he misread it and let Kittle go by him. That was his bad. Now, it just kind of depends on how you look at it, right? Like, is Curl in that spot if Derek Forrest is, if he's healthy? I mean, you know, Derek Forrest has been playing deep safety even when Curl is back there. So maybe that type of mistake still happens. But, you know, Cam Curl is an instinctual football player. He's always in the right spot. Derek Forrest has a lot of those similar qualities, but I think having two of those guys instead of one of those guys, you know, really helps. And I thought, I don't know what you thought about this, but I thought they had some really interesting kind of formations this game. Bobby McCain, I'm interested to see what his percentage of snaps were. It didn't feel like he was on the field all the time as he had been in years past, or like the season. And I mean, even Rashad Wild Goose got a snap or two. They were really throwing things against the wall to see what would stick.
Well, that's the thing, right? The last, and I'll be curious to see the all 22, you know how it is on TV. You can't quite see everything, but when Benjamin St. Juice was out, right, we knew they were down a corner, but really they were down one of their five defensive backs. They've got five guys that they like to play for the most part, although I'm curious about your McCain observation. But then when you take Curl out, you still have the same problem. Now, granted, feels like they have more safety depth with Jeremy Reeves and Percy Butler. But, I mean, you know, these guys haven't really played defense all year for whatever the reason, and mostly because there's other guys in front of them. So when you already are pretty thin and then you take out the most versatile guy you have, it's a tough task for sure. And you're right. They did the first half, I thought, went pretty well, all things considered. You know, the penalties really screwed them. Jahan Dotson, you know, he had one catch taken away on a penalty, and then he had that one play where he dropped it, and he almost made a really great adjustment. He did make a great adjustment, but then couldn't bring it in. And anyway, the defense held up, but ultimately, you know, they just couldn't get it done. And kudos to the Niners for figuring it all out. Did Rivera? I'm trying to think. Were there any injuries to note here? I mean, so obviously Chase Young played, and that was the biggest thing. But was there anything else on the injury?
Well, we didn't ask Rivera about it, but I mean, John Bostic suffered a pec injury and was ruled out. That was
right.
You know, alarming after he was lost for the season last year with a pec injury.
Yeah.
It seemed like James Smith-Williams had a head injury. Maybe does he have another concussion after he was just in the protocol? That is maybe concerning, but nothing in terms of, you know, potentially starters. I mean, James Smith-Williams is a starter, but I mean, if Chase Young is playing at this level, then, you know, maybe that helps offset it.
Let me go back to the offense for a second. You know, the main story this week that everybody kept talking about was how they essentially abandoned the run last week with Brian Robinson, only 12 carries in a game which he was averaging over 7 a game. This game, it's the opposite. He gets 22 attempts but only averages 2.6 yards a carry. I see people out there saying, what are you doing? Why do you continue to run it? The Niners have allowed I think it was they had, I think it was like seven straight games where they allowed 70 or fewer yards rushing, which is like a streak that like only like that Ravens team with like Ray Lewis had back in the day. So I think people were asking, why are you doing this? I actually didn't have a problem with it. I mean, obviously you want it to be more effective, and you know, we'll look at the tape and see if their line just couldn't do much. But like, this is what they need to do right now. Unfortunately, they need to shorten the game. They need to go to play action. And I think that Heinicke was effective, frankly, when doing that, because the Niners were, you know, I don't know if they were creeping up to the line, but they weren't really respecting the pass. And he did make some throws down the field. Some completed, some were taken away by penalty. So I didn't have an issue with Robinson getting all those runs. Obviously you wish they were more effective. What was your view from the press box?
Yeah, I think you would have liked to incorporate a little bit more play action in there. That was kind of the read. That was kind of the takeaway from the Giants game. I don't know how many necessarily opportunities they ran this game. I did feel like they went a little bit more to it, but you know, the way that they were having success on those corners, I mean, I thought it was notable that for being such a run-heavy team, that each of, you know, Washington's kind of top receivers had a touchdown today. Samuel scored, Dotson scored, and so did
McLaurin.
McLaurin, yeah. So it was...
He's forgettable. It's fine.
No, I was tripped up. Dotson scored, right? That was, yeah. That was a thing that happened. Okay.
That was a thing.
Yes. And so... Yeah, I don't know where I was going with that, but it felt, I think something I'm interested that if they do stick with Carson, how do they blend those two styles? Because, you know, Carson had talked about a lot about how the identity changed, but when they threw him back in there, it was, you know, up tempo, no huddle type stuff that they were trying to score quickly. They didn't really give him the benefit of running the ball. So how does he do with that style of offense in place? I don't know if we'll see it, but we probably will.
Well, I mean, this is the key is, you know, again, it is so fascinating, this Heinicke versus Wentz debate. And, you know, you get it, I get it. We see everybody on Twitter has takes and opinions and they want to scream and yell whichever way they think to go. The one reality is this, that when Carson Wentz was starting earlier in the year, they didn't have Brian Robinson for essentially that entire time. He came back in week 5, didn't get double-digit carries till week 6, the game that Wentz got hurt. And that running game changed the dynamic of a lot here. I know that, again, this wasn't the best game for the run, but they controlled the clock. That allowed them to keep the game close. Unfortunately, San Fran, you know, made enough plays to pull away. That was the thing. Also, the defense, as I mentioned before with Curl, is way better since Wentz was out. It's odd to say way better after a game that they gave up their most points this season. But by and large,
I thought they played well today.
Yeah.
I know they gave up 37 points, but I don't really.
Yeah. No, I'm with you. Again, they're missing Curl. And, you know, when those, they held San Fran to field goals in the fourth quarter when, you know, they were up against it. And, you know, not that they were close, but you know what I mean? Like, things got away, could have easily spiraled out of control even further. They were at least down only 2 scores when Wentz came in and threw a touchdown. Wait, what was I just saying? Now I'm having,
we're talking about the defense playing well, and I'll just, while you're remembering your train of thought, I'll point out that, you know, there was that stretch there where they started within, at the San Francisco 40, the Washington 11, the Washington 25, and the Commanders held them to field goals each time. So, you know, they bent, but they didn't break in the second half for the most part. That's it. It's why I thought the defense played well.
Yeah. And I was just saying before about how in terms of what they were doing offensively, if they stick with the plan that they've been running with Heinicke, which is to say ball control, lead with the run game, the defense complements it. I want to see Wentz in that, because his arm strength to get the ball to those receivers down the field, I think could be pretty interesting here. Don't get confused with me saying interesting all of a sudden means Carson Wentz is going to the Pro Bowl. Obviously, there's a lot of questions about all these quarterbacks, but you know, that's where they're at. 2 games to go, Cleveland next, then Dallas, both games at FedEx Field. So we will see how all that goes. I guess that's final takeaway from you. Are you feeling, even though we just said that nothing's changed in terms of their playoffs scenario, they did play a game, they did lose a game. Do you feel better, worse, or the same about them making the playoffs?
I feel the same. I kind of think they're still going to make it. Maybe that makes me delusional, but, you know, the Browns, they just lost to the Saints. I guess it, and then the Cowboys, they won today. They're going to beat clinch. Are they going to rest their starters in week 18? I mean, these are two games that I think Washington, that, you know, the schedule, they're just handing Washington to beat them. You know, it's kind of like the Sunday night game last week that, you know, you were a 4-point favorite. Can you capitalize? And, you know, Washington, I think, is going to be favored in both of these games. They're close here, and can they do it?
Yeah, I mean, it looks like Dallas may have nothing to play for, I guess, right? I mean, I don't think they're still close enough to Philly. So it really comes down to next week on some level. If you beat Cleveland, you're in pretty good position. You lose to Cleveland, and either Detroit or Seattle wins, now you're trailing, and you need that team to win, or that team to lose to get in. So pretty fascinating. I think I'm largely with you. Nothing's really changed, but I still think they'll get in. But we'll see. Matt, you are a gentleman and a scholar for giving us time here on the podcast. Of course, follow Matt on Twitter at Matthew_Paris, P-A-R-A-S. Read him at the Washington Times. And my guy, have a safe trip back home. Happy holidays to you and yours if you're seeing anybody on your way back here. And by the way, congrats on being away in the coldest time forever. And oh my God, it was
a little chilly here, 55.
Yeah. So I went out to my car today just to like start the engine, and I had left like some remnants of like whatever drink I had in a cup, and it was completely rock solid frozen. Like that's what we were dealing with. Anyway, appreciate my guy. I'll see when you get back. All right. Many thanks to Matt Paris for his time. Thanks to everybody for checking out the podcast. And by the way, obviously, you know, it's a tough day in terms of the team, but I really do want to just say many thanks to everybody for listening to this podcast, for being a part of this community, for reading me on The Athletic. It really does mean a lot. We'll talk more about this later in the week. But anyway, I just wanted to at least say that. Merry Christmas. Happy Hanukkah to everybody. Safe travels. Please stay safe. Please stay warm. And we've got more to go here. 2 weeks to go. It's going to be really interesting to see what the Commanders can do. But that's it for now. Ben Standing signing off. Until next time. See ya.